One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Well, as we actually move into another segment with Richard Fitzwilliams, we're delighted to actually welcome two fine folk back to the team. Of course, we have the fabulous Kira Allsbrook. How are you, Kira?
I'm good, thank you.
And the equally fabulous Yaz DeGraff. How are you, Yaz?
All good, Alex. How are you?
Brilliant. Excellent stuff. And of course, we have Richard Fitzwilliams there. Richard, I know you're desperately keen to actually talk about the little princess, and obviously Princess Ariel, who lost her voice and then actually sort of married a prince and lost it again, then found her voice again. It's just so wonderful. We could talk about that. We could talk about the fact that there seemed to be very little diversity in the number of chickens that were being held by Meghan and Harry. But Let's move on. Let's actually, before we actually talk about the interview, that particular sort of aspect, let's actually turn to Kira, first of all. What were your thoughts? I mean, presumably, as you're specialising as a public relations student in this particular field, and certainly coverage of Diana, you might have found the 2 hours or so quite interesting.
Yeah, I did actually find it really interesting. I mean, I've been looking up, you know, researching since interviews happened, and a lot of apparently of the comments that were made by Meghan and Harry aren't entirely 100% true. You know, I mean, on their
careful,
part,
Kira, when Piers Morgan said that, you know what happened to him?
I know, I mean, it's a radio show, I'm going to be honest. But no, in terms of the royal family, I mean, you know, it's good that they've actually finally spoken out and they're doing an investigation. But who knows, really? I mean, it's in some ways similar to Diana. So I can go on a rant about this for ages if you want me to, Alex.
Well, we will return to you. Yes, we talked obviously in the week, obviously, within the community engagement side of things there. Yes, but what are your thoughts on this whole sequence? So is it just a case of those British people? They're so crazy.
You know, Alex, it's just one of those things where it is what it is. Are we really surprised? No. We saw it coming.
Yeah, I mean, did you have any sort of, I mean, has it adjusted your own sort of mindset with respect to the royals and their views and, you know, your perspective as a Bermudan now studying in Britain?
I'll say a little bit, you know, all knowledge is good knowledge. Do you trust it? Never. But, you know, it is what it is.
Okay. Deeply philosophical. Let's turn to the principality, given, obviously, Wales always has one or two key things to actually talk about. Robin, Pierce, welcome aboard. Your own thoughts on this particular segment. Is it a case of, well, you know, we want more of the little princess there. We want more of Oprah and stage-managed publicity. Or is it a case of, we don't care anymore?
Well, first of all, I have to say I agree wholeheartedly with what Yaz just said. It is what it is. And I think you've got a massive culture clash here. Now, I'm not particularly a royalist. I've never tried to hide that. But what you have here is such a culture clash in that the royals are obviously steeped in tradition, pomp, circumstance. The go-to during a crisis is to put their heads in the sand, wait till it all goes away, and then pop back up when everything's gone quiet. Against this, you've got a young, brash young lady from America whose entire sort of celebrity thing, if you like, is probably based on like the Kardashians. I mean, she says really bizarre things like, well, I didn't know that I'd have to curtsy in front of the Queen. I mean, you've heard of the royal family, right? I mean, surely, dim as you come across, even you, Meghan, know how to Google. Because if I was single and going to you know, try and marry into a very famous family, I would have Googled the heck out of them to find out what I was getting into. Surely that's basic. I would expect, because of the times that we live in, and this is no disrespect to anybody, I would have expected what was said to be said. I would have expected, because she's the first person of colour to join the royal family, that would be brought up. And of course, everybody is on about mental health. Everybody has to have a condition these days. And of course, that came up as well. I'm not convinced. I mean, basically, it's an undignified circus. And trying to reason it out is to try and apply dignity where there really is none at present.
Okay, interesting viewpoint there. We've been joined now by our ace correspondent from Norwich, who I think last night had the ultimate test of actually watching the entire interview from that point of view. Well, let's face it, it was either that or watch your selection of the latest Disney movie, Robin, and, you know, given a choice, where's she going to go? Rebecca Bond, welcome. What are your thoughts on this whole sequence?
I thought it was very interesting. I think it's important to note that a lot of the issues that were raised in the interview regarding race, mental health, should all be taken seriously, regardless of who they're coming from. I think that's what I took from the interview the most. I think it was, I heard Robin there saying it was undignified in a way. I think it was, there was no direct attack on anyone specifically. There was no direct attack on the Queen. I think it was mainly just an attack on the establishment, or the firm, as they kept referring to it as. So I do think there's some credit in that to be said. I think a lot of the personal issues are very sensitive that they raise. I think it's something that obviously I've never personally experienced, so I will never be able to be in their shoes in that respect. So I think it's important that I try and sympathise with the issue they're in. And I do understand that there's the view that they wanted privacy, but as I was arguing yesterday briefly with you, Alex, not with you, but, you know, on the call with a few people, that, you know, there's a lot of rumours going around, particularly about Meghan. I think if I was in her position, I think I would take the opportunity to be able to sit down and tell my side of the story. You know, there's bullying accusations, there's all sorts of accusations that I think would hurt your feelings as an individual, particularly if they hadn't been true. Again, we have no evidence what's true and what isn't, but I would take the opportunity to sit down and say, this is my side of the story. So I respect that they did that with the opportunity that they had. I do.
Okay, interesting line there. Thanks for that, Rebecca. So we have Yaz, it is what it is. We have Robin, undignified. We have Kira, she could talk for days about the whole process and probably still not actually sort of have sufficient sort of line in terms of that. And Rebecca, versions of truth, whose truth, what truth? Speaking of truth, let's turn to obviously our truthful veracity seeker and indeed commentator, Richard Fitzwilliams. Good to see you, Richard. We're not going to talk for obvious reasons about the sting, as we refer to it, but would you like to actually share, now that you've had a chance to actually reflect on the whole thing, days have passed by, is this damaging? Is this problematic? Is the kind of vibe that we're getting from Kira, Rebecca, Robin and Yaz kind of symptomatic of the nation as a whole? Or shall we just prepare to actually hand over lock, stock and barrel and let's have Meghan take over everything? The world, queen of the world, Empress Meghan.
Well, this, I think, is... firstly, make the point, I do think this is tremendously damaging to the royal family. I mean, if you look over the last decades, you've got the 1930s and the abdication, that was the king abdicating to marry a divorcee, Mrs. Simpson. Then you had the 1990s, which were disastrous because you had the War of the Waleses and you had a situation where Charles and Diana were briefing against each other in different papers and had journalists paid, I presume, to put out different parts of different points of view in articles and so on. Then you have also the situation of the big television clashes, Diana and Panorama, Charles and Jonathan Dimbleby, where he admitted adultery. But you could argue, the problem, one of the problems with the arguments going through all the press on this and listening to what the panel said, I haven't that clue, and this really worries me, how it's going to play out. The so-called interview took an hour and a half. The actual interview, apparently, was something like 2 hours and 20 minutes, 3 hours and 20 minutes or so, I've been told. Now, the danger of all this is, and it's already starting to happen, is that the press deal with X and Y and the royal family as well, because that's what they've seen. Then, and apparently this is happening in the States, various aspects of it, clips are starting to filter out on different aspects. The panel have been talking about the interview and whether or not it was desirable and what they thought of it and so forth. It would be interesting also to hear everyone's point of view, just hypothetically, if you like, is if you were the palace, how would you deal with it? Because this was a question that I have to say was the palace always preferred, never complained, never explained, and that wasn't possible here.
I mean, great news though, Richard, that we can actually look forward to, around like Justice League, the director's cut of the Meghan and Harry interview. There'll be a director's cut of this one coming through as well. Splendid. Let's take that question though. Kira, you know, top public relations soul that you are, that you will be, and so on, and you graduate as a perspective. What are your views? How would you handle it if the palace came to you today and said, Kira, we need help?
Well, funnily enough, we were talking about this in one of my modules the other day, and this was really during the silent period, you know, that the royal family were taking to respond to anything, and obviously the main thing is to respond and to investigate the issues, which is what they've done, and what they've always done is just keep silent, and that's what they've told every single member of their family, of the institution. You know, if you've got, for the sake of their reputation, just keep quiet, really, and okay, you know, don't make an allegation unless if it's 100% true and it's not really going to cause much damage.
So say nothing, despite what Prince William actually did. Yes, what would your advice be? I think we kind of again consider this. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts would probably be to speak. I think, you know, holding silent, not saying what needs to be said. If Kate did what she did or did not do what she did, even her side, it would make sense. Her staying silent wouldn't help the issue. Everybody staying silent wouldn't help the issue either.
Okay, so you'd recommend them to actually come forward and say, what did you do, Kate Middleton, that made Meghan cry, allegedly? Rebecca?
Yeah, as I said, I think it's important to be able to tell your truth, because I think being in the public eye in general, I think, is, you know, quite a dangerous place to be in, because there are always going to be rumours. There's always going to be accusations. I think it's then knowing when it's appropriate to step in. I think the only issue I have, I mean, I'm all for them speaking out about issues, especially the serious nature of a lot of them. I think the issue was staying silent for so long and then all of a sudden dropping every bombshell. I think a lot of them were so important, they should have been raised at the time they happened. That's my only not criticism, my only, you know, thing I'd point out and say, you know what, we should have heard about that sooner. We shouldn't have had, you know, months and years almost of build up of all these issues that you've been dealing with, all of a sudden coming out in an interview that, you know, a lot of those issues could potentially have been sorted between the family members. And I think in a way that could have been more effective, because, you know, they are a family. Remove the whole royal family status and they are all humans, and they are a family at the end of the day. So I reckon sitting down and sorting the issues before taking them to the public eye, you know, the whole world is in on this issue now. So, you know, again, I'm not in their position. I do think taking the opportunity to talk about such serious issues should be taken, and I think I probably would have done the same thing. My only, you know, issue is that they could have potentially spoke about it and maybe come to a family resolution. It might have been nicer than, you know, bringing it to quite a hostile view in the public eye.
Interesting range of thoughts there. I mean, I suppose you could say historically, in recent years, single interviews on television for the royals, Princess Diana and Martin Bashir, Prince Charles, of course, follow up to that, and latterly Prince Andrew, not necessarily the best of decisions to actually be made. Robin, where do you sit on this aspect? Is it a case of say nothing? Is it a case of come out and say something? Is it a case of say something at the time, but don't wash it in public?
Well, first of all, it's very interesting to me that they say, you know, I think it was Oprah that said, you know, you want to speak your truth. And that's an interesting phrase, your truth, because your truth is going to be completely different to somebody else's truth, because it's from your own personal perspective. You might be completely honest. Other people might see it different, because it, you know, it really doesn't matter how good a person you try to be. You will always be the villain in somebody's story. So we need to remember that. Now, the question as to public relations, okay. I would tell the royal family to keep quiet for now, because as Richard has pointed out, there is a lot more footage that can be leaked strategically. Meghan, in my opinion, is playing a very kind of manipulative game. And
is Prince Harry being held hostage? That's all we need to know. Is he being held hostage with the chickens?
Isn't he supposed to have like SAS training or something? Maybe it's Stockholm syndrome. But anyway, I would tell them, you know, be quiet for now, because anything you don't know what are the bombshells loaded onto that sort of TV monitor, ready to drop, and you're in a position where saying nothing, it may blow over. Say something, there's going to be a retaliation, and with retaliation, of course, comes escalation. The damage limitation here is to be quiet, because it's bad enough as it is, and if it gets any worse, nobody comes out untarnished, and they're already tarnished. All sides are. I mean, the effluence has hit the fan, and everybody is affected.
Richard, surely when the unveiling of Princess Diana's statue in July actually happens, everybody's going to be happy again. I mean, Meghan will be back in the country, we'll be arm in arm, it'll be all as though nothing ever happened.
Well, of course, this isn't likely to include Meghan, because it's thought that the baby, or baby girl, as we know, is due in the summer, so it's most unlikely. This, however, as you say, this is the Kensington Sunken Garden. They're going to unveil a statue to Princess Diana on what would have been her 60th birthday, and that they...
But Richard, the Spencer family are connected with the racism industry. They were actually active slavers. Surely it should be knocked down straight away, put up, and then take it down.
Well, you see, I see you've been doing your homework. Yes, I saw that rather embarrassing revelation. Just to come back, if I may, to some of the points that the panel raised about how you respond from that. Firstly, the palace had no idea whatsoever that it was being done. They went and did it without telling anybody. Of course, they didn't have to. Secondly, I do think it is important just to go back a week and a half. Now, that's a very long time here, but I was actually saying that I felt, because the Duke of Edinburgh was hospitalised in 99, he's 100 on the 10th of June, I thought it would have been appropriate, had it been possible, obviously the advertising, the hype, and clearly this wasn't considered possible in any way at all or desirable, it would appear, but I would have
got
thought,
to go out at the same time as the Commonwealth Day, surely. Has to, well, you know?
I would have thought that a postponement was certainly something that people might consider. I also think that if you look at what has gone out, it's gone to 68 countries. It's had an audience of something like 50 million people. I mean, that's extraordinary.
It certainly actually gives a whole new meaning to the term water cooler television, which is as you say, quite bizarre. I mean, yes, in Bermuda, have you had any contact with folk back there over there? I mean, or is it just a case of what the hey? We've come to expect nothing less from the royal family.
It's kind of 50-50, you know. Some people, they're like fully indulged in it. And I talked to my mom about it, and she was just like, yeah, I'm not getting into that. Don't want to watch it. No, not ready.
Is that because she's a fan of the royal family, or she's not a fan, or she's an enthusiast, or she sort of thinks it's time that we actually sort of stepped away? Or what any sort of rationale for that?
She just thinks, I don't think she's really much a fan of the royals, but she doesn't think that Meghan should have said anything. Yeah.
Okay. Kira, what's the sort of take on yourself? Because obviously you've got Scottish and English blood pumping through your veins, so who knows what could happen?
Actually, quick fact, we found out on the Ancestry that my three times great my great grandfather, his parents were actually from Bermuda. So, yeah, it's really interesting. Anyway, sorry. In terms of what I guess the Scottish and the English think, the Scottish, in all honesty, aren't really bothered. They're in there.
Much like the Welsh, then.
In a way. But they're in their own little bubble. Whereas the English, I haven't really spoke to my other half of the family that are English about it, because some of them are royalists and some of them are, anti-royals. So I'm kind of in the middle with all of this. You know, I do believe with what Yaz's mum says, you know, maybe Meghan shouldn't have really said anything. But then again, like Robin says, and like what Oprah said, you know, speak your truth. And at the end of the day, you can't take, you know, that freedom of speech away from her. You know, it's up to her.
And clearly actually having a private life in Canada, where actually you don't have the sort of possible openings that you'd have with Oprah in Hollywood, that wouldn't have been an option, really, because they wouldn't have wanted that privacy, would they, really? Or maybe, I don't know. Rebecca, again, any thoughts from yourself in terms of, I mean, what are your thoughts of your family? I mean, has there been any sort of notion, or is it a case of, you know, in the Bond family, frankly, we are above such things?
Do you know what? We haven't really discussed it yet. I don't believe my parents have watched it. I don't think that's out of any, you know, strong belief of, anti-royalist or royalist. We don't really have any strong views on that. I mean, myself personally, I don't have any really passionate or really strict views on that kind of topic. I think at the end of the day, I'm just viewing the whole situation more as a human situation. As I said, they are just a family at the end of the day. If you take away the titles, the wealth almost, they are just
why would you take away the title? Surely Archie deserves to be a prince.
There you go. But yeah, as I said, I'm trying to take it as more of a human issue. So I think if I was in that position, regardless of my status, I think I would want to have a say. I wouldn't want to be silenced. And I can imagine how horrible that would be to, you know, be told, oh, don't say anything because this could happen, or don't say anything because this could happen, because they are serious issues. And I think, as I said, I keep repeating myself, if I had the chance to, I think I would speak out. But again, I'm not a royalist, I'm not an anti-royalist, I'm just trying to view this as a, you know, if I was in that situation, what would I do? And I think that's why I'm a bit more sympathetic, because they're human.
Having met Sarah Phillips several times at various sort of events and such like, and done various sort of quotes to her, in fact, she's even done an ident for Siren Radio, Zara. She's not worried about not being a princess. Neither is Peter Phillips worried about being a prince. Again, I think there are issues there about the titling that might have been a bit confused. Robin, is it a case of, well, he might be called the Prince of Wales, but what a shower he's got for the family?
Oh, good grief. I have a kind of sort of Prince Charles story. I was employed, the last stage of my my employment at the civil service, I was custodian of Carnarvon Castle, where the investiture was held. And it was suggested at one point that Prince Charles might well visit, because he was going to be in the vicinity, and we were on alert that in 2 weeks' time, week, whatever it was, that he might be calling, and to, you know, get everything ready. I asked for the day off, and my line manager said, "What? What do you mean a day off? Nobody wants a day off when you know, the royal family are around, because you get presented to them, you get to meet them, and it's not that I'm against them. I'm just indifferent. And I just didn't want to be there. I don't agree with the forelock tugging and the bowing. And I didn't want to be
present." Would you not have curtsied, Robin?
Oh, you know, I just...
No.
That's just not me. So I asked, you know, if you can I just have the day off? Or if you're doing that meet and greet lineup thing, can I just be up on top of one of the towers looking the other way? Because much as I didn't want to be there myself, neither did I want to be there and spoil it or drag it down for anybody else. So in the end, he didn't turn up anyway. So I was spared taking a day off.
Obviously, Robin, word got...
one point, Robin, there. This is an interesting one because I'd like to come back. It does seem, as regarding affecting it for everybody else, it's important to remember, as I was mentioning, for my voice had a glitch, if you consider 50 million people have now seen this, if you actually consider that in another month or two, that perhaps will be half as many again or whatever. I mean, this is absolutely enormous. It also is the case that you could, I mean, coming back to the problem of how the palace deal with it, a short 61 word statement from the Queen, talking, Rebecca, about family, absolutely, but also saying recollections may differ. Because one thing we haven't dealt with yet is what precisely was said in this interview. I mean, as I say, I was against the idea of the interview because I thought damage to monarchy, and I'm a great supporter of it. I also thought that wished or hoped that it had, there was some chance of postponing it, which there certainly wasn't. But I hadn't a clue, not the remotest clue, not the vaguest clue, and I don't think anybody else had, other than Meghan and Harry's inner circle, that what precisely it would contain. I do find the idea of your truth somewhat questionable, because if you question what truth is, I mean, there are certain things that are factual. I am speaking at the moment, we are talking about the interview. But as for whether they had two weddings or who had an argument and before the wedding and who cried and whether the palace was like a prison and she had to surrender passports, keys and driving license, or indeed, whether the deals with Netflix and Spotify, which I always thought were part and parcel of what they wanted to do in their career with in Hollywood, which is where they want to be based, whether those deals would have happened anyway, I thought, as opposed to the fact that they claimed that they, or Harry claimed them, cut off financially and therefore had to. In an hour and a half, the numbers of topics are enormous. And whether there was another wedding, who rowed with who, the issue of the title, which in fact Archie has if they wanted it, but it's not a princely title yet until Charles ascends the throne, the issue of whether or not the palace is, how similar it is to a prison, whether palace staff briefed against them, or there's always a danger, by the way, in making too many comments about pieces in papers, not because you don't want to protect, but because if you do, that which is undesirable will get more legs and there'll be further comment. Then the issue of security, this I thought was very sad, because you were dealing with a situation where taxpayers weren't prepared to pay under the current law, or under the current situation, it is a matter for the Home Secretary, for royals who are not working. So when they stepped back, only to step down. Once they stepped down, they weren't working royals and therefore didn't qualify for it. I'd have thought they could have come to some sort of arrangement in this, but they only
had 30 million to play with. I mean, that's not a great deal to actually sort of have to exist on if you're looking at those number of chickens, you know? And again, I come back to the chickens. And I mean, I can endorse the fact, Richard, that you have seen the interview. And as I sort of say this, in the year 2018, we know exactly what the future is going to lie. No, only kidding. It is 2018.
One of the problems when you see it is, frankly, you just don't know what the future, or much about the future. But to come to the two topics that at the end, the two topics which are absolutely toxic. Firstly, there is the accusation, and in fact, race came up a lot in the interview, but most specifically that an unnamed member of the royal family, whilst Meghan was pregnant, asked how dark Archie's skin was going to be. I mean, obviously, that is deeply shocking, and obviously, again, that is extremely damaging. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. Then we also had the fact that, so she said, that she felt so isolated, so vulnerable, and essentially suicidal. I mean, both of those issues, the issue of race and the issue of mental health, It's going to be a Sisyphean. That is a link, just in case anyone didn't know Sisyphus was supposed to...
He pushed a rock backwards up a hill. I mean, that's so... He didn't have to deal with chickens. I come back to
that. I want to appease you, Alex. I threw that in. It's going to be an absolutely vast task. Firstly, when you haven't seen all the footage that's there. And secondly... In the Commonwealth, which the Queen, I mean, I believe William was absolutely right to say, even if it was an unprecedented throw-off, that the royal family is not a racist family, because if you actually consider what the Queen has done during her reign, building up the Commonwealth, which are mainly composed of persons of colour, and as Megan said in the interview, I think 67% of them are young people. There was always this terrific potential that the marriage had, because Megan was American, biracial, and a divorcee, former actress, but she was articulate.
But it blew up in their faces, Richard. It blew up in their faces. Very dangerous when you're dealing with actresses.
You mentioned regarding matters exploding. I mean, I compared this to some form of nuclear weapon. One of the reasons that I think of it so passionately is that most of the panel, and they've said this, don't have especially strong views one way or the other in the royal family. Since I do, I mean, this is really damaging. Firstly, the support on Hollywood, and we know how big Oprah is, you all know that, is enormous. Secondly, the American, President Biden praised Meghan's courage in bringing up mental health and talking about it. Thirdly, the rest of the world. I mean, this will do Britain's image a lot of harm. And whether or not people discover or don't discover who the alleged royal racist is, the facts of the matter are that the numbers of issues already raised, you go down this whole list, even the accusations that the palace have what are called holiday parties for the press, where they brief favoured journalists and then brief against you if they don't like you and so on. And also, we haven't mentioned this. This was, I was wondering why Prince Charles didn't feature a great deal in the...
He's not taking his calls, obviously.
Yes, but he didn't feature a great deal in over the last couple of years, when there have been so much in the papers about Harry and Meghan. And the reason, of course, is that Harry and Charles have fallen out pretty badly and not taking calls
in
one way.
In the words of Genesis, Richard, no son of mine. I shall hold fire on that.
There was also Leah, who said that sharper than a serpent's tooth was a child who betrayed you. But the problem also, I'd mention, is the split between the brothers and how that resolves itself. And just to throw, if I may, one further thought, precisely what happens now, it's not just a question. I read an article in the Daily Mail talking about the way the monarchy will finally shake this off and move forward. But the problem is what happens week after week, month after month now. All of this is desperately damaging. With the Queen as head of state and 95 very soon, with the Platinum Jubilee next year, at a royal event, who does what? Do Harry and Meghan come back? Do they want to come back? Would they want a title offered? Or is it thought by the palace that what has been revealed has been done in so scandalous a way? And this business of your truth, how true is that and in what way? Were there two marriages, for example, or what? So they couldn't have been. So what did
it's
that
the,
mean?
It's the gift that keeps on giving. And obviously, Keira Knightley with De Graaf Knightley, public relations consultants to royals at hand, will obviously clearly pick up the baton and run with it, which is superb. Keira, any final closing question you'd like to put to the team or indeed Richard?
I'll save that for my interview with Richard.
That's okay. That's fine. Yeah, just hold fire. After all, you've got to leave the public wanting more. Rebecca, any closing thoughts for yourself?
I just wanted to add that I think Richard made a great point there about the racist comment. I think the issue with bringing that up was that they never pinned who said that. So I think now that there's a speculation of who it could have been, and I think it would have been helpful in a way to have known who'd said it. But I think ultimately what we get from that is there is racism in the establishment, which is bad enough as it is. So regardless of who said it, I really, really hope that there are, you know, efficient inquiries going into issues like that.
What a great Christmas parlor game for the Royal Search.
Yes.
Peter Morgan. Yes, you know, they can have, instead of one biddy, two biddy, three, who's the racist? You know, point the racist. It's great. Marvellous. Robin, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, interesting, Richard, saying, you know, how will the royal family move forward from this? Mm-hmm. And I think that's at the heart of the problem, because the royal family don't move forward. They pretty much like the status quo, because this entire fiasco proves very clearly they have learned nothing from the PR disaster that was Diana, and they're still seem to be picking on the unpopular in-law.
And Yaz, closing thoughts to your good self, of course. Any particular sort of lines you'd like to leave us with?
I think I'm good, thanks, Alex.
You see, that's the kind of attitude that should actually just work in every sense of the word. You know, we haven't even managed to get into The Little Mermaid and the possible racism of people living under the sea. And don't get me started on the sort of the notion of the conductor that's actually there and his crustacean shell. But still, we'll come to that. We'll have more filmic reviews. Richard Fitzwilliams, thank you, sir, for your time once again. We could also talk about the Elgin Marbles, who apparently Boris is saying are staying within Britain.
One shot on the Elgin Marbles, Alex. Who was it who asked George Clooney in, I think it was 2014 or 15?
Exactly, Richard. That was not a spoof pair of miscreants. It was indeed your good self, Richard Fitzwilliams, actually asking that question and indeed getting a solid response, which is fantastic. Richard Fitzwilliams, Yaz DeGraff, Robin Pierce, Kira Allsbrook, and Rebecca Bond, thank you. Film reviews? Well, it's the gift that keeps on going. And as I say, the director's cut of Meghan and Harry, perhaps Robin, or will it just be Justice League? Who knows?
Justice League all the way.
Feeling good about ourselves, having a positive self-image, all of these things are absolutely vital when it comes to actually how we're coping with this experience we call life. And with that new global index analysing levels of self-love suggesting a worrying crisis in the UK, we clearly need to address this. And that's one of the reasons the Body Shop have actually launched Self-Love Uprising, led by activist and author who we're delighted to welcome on the programme today, Gina Martin. How are you, Gina?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, great. Now, in terms of this, obviously, we've just said that, being very polite, being very British, you're good, I'm okay, we're all okay, we're fine. But the fact of the matter is, it does seem as though there are an awful lot of British folk who are more likely to experience anxiety, depression, 30% more likely, it would seem. That's a bit troubling, isn't it?
It is troubling, yeah. To be, you know, 30% more likely to experience that than the global average is a pretty shocking statistic that the Body Shop have found out. I think it's... So sorry, I'm going to have to...
Don't worry, we like a little bleep in the background. It's always very important. It keeps us happy.
Only 23 requests to go on the news today.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, it's a really worrying statistic. And I think it has a lot as well to do with the type of nation we are. I know that I have seen traditionally in my family and my extended family, my workplaces, this kind of British sensibility of kind of the stiff upper lip. And we don't really talk about our feelings. We have this kind of blitz spirit. And I think we've often seen, you know, dealing with that as something indulgent to look after ourselves or to talk about how we're feeling or to be vulnerable. And that's what I'm trying to do with the Body Shop as part of this campaign, is to just start conversations around what is happening here and how we can start to solve it.
And that's really critical, because we're looking at, I mean, some of the things which automatically we'd say, yeah, okay, we tick that box. Money matters can be worrying. People more concerned about their earnings than their intellect. I mean, is that one of those classic cases where we know the price of everything but the value of nothing? We need to start really thinking about our own internal sort of value to the planet.
Yeah, it really is. And it's also like the question of what does success mean, right? We place so much weight on these commercial measures of success under capitalism and this modern society we live in. And actually, what kind of impact are we putting on the community around us? What kind of impact are we giving to our family and friends? What kind of impact, like you say, are we giving to the planet? There's a lot to feel good about if we look at our behavior and the kind of people we are and what we care about, but we're continuously distracted by these kind of measures of self-worth. And I think it's just about shifting the conversation over to your well-being, your happiness, your vulnerability, your ability to talk to people you love, how you make them feel. It's those kinds of things we want to focus on more.
About 100 years ago or so, people would actually say it's all the fault of the bourgeoisie. They shouldn't actually worry about these things. These are first world problems, we then would consider in the mid-20th century. Now, of course, it is something whereby I think it's important that we have that positive self-image to work through that, but it's often easier said than done, Gina. I mean, how do you think that self-love uprising, as opposed to self-love rising, can actually help encourage and engender that particular notion? Because ultimately, nobody knows what's going on in another person's mind, not that we want to necessarily, but it is important to ensure that that positivity is somehow transmitted.
Yeah, it's very, very hard. And actually, often when we talk about this stuff, we talk about it in the abstract, right? And we don't give like an actionable way to help, which is why this campaign is really great, because we're trying to get a million acts of small self-love in a year together with the Body Shop. So those kinds of things are things we often don't talk about, right? They're not like, okay, I'm going to have shinier hair, I'm going to make more money. They're things like, I'm going to say no to more things. I'm going to get better rest. I'm going to look after my mental health and get therapy before I get to the point where I absolutely need it. I'm going to, you know, it's all of these small things that are maybe not the most glamorous to talk about. I'm going to make better decisions now that future me is going to be happy for, however mundane they feel. It's all of these kind of things that maybe aren't sensationalist enough, maybe they're not glamorous enough, but that's what we want to talk about. And in the world today with social media, we're really overwhelmed with information, we're really overwhelmed with advice, but we're also in a great position where we can create that community quite quickly and we can encourage each other quite quickly too.
Is this challenge something which is gender blind? Does it really not matter whether you're female or male, or is it a case of, well, you know, women tend to worry more than men or vice versa?
It's definitely not gender blind. I mean, it's a human issue, right? Your level of self-worth and how you feel about yourself. So it doesn't discriminate across any gender, sexuality, race, anything. But we do know that women and girls and marginalized genders struggle more because of the stereotypes and the rigid beauty standards that are, you know, imposed on them hundreds of times a day through the TV, the media, the magazines they pick up, social media. And so we're really trying to encourage those communities especially to lean on each other and to encourage each other with this self-love, because it depends on your postcode. It depends on your gender identity. Some people society is harder for. And so those are the people that we need to be uplifting through this campaign as well.
You mentioned depends on your postcode there. Manchester and Newcastle seem to score highly. What is it about the Geordies or the Manx that effectively mean that they're leading the field in this?
Oh, my northern family. I'm from Liverpool and I went to Union Leeds. And those are another two of the cities that have been leading high in worrying statistics that the Body Shop have found out too. I'm not sure what it is about the north, but what I do know is that we have especially in Liverpool, we have a real self-deprecating humour. We laugh about ourselves. We, you know, a lot of the data in there says about rating ourselves out of 10 and the average would rate themselves 5. Why are we looking at ourselves so critically here? Would we be talking to our friends like that? Would I walk up to a friend of mine and rate them out of 10? No, I wouldn't. So we really need to become aware of the way we're talking to ourselves. And if we're doing that, we're going to be better parents. We're going to be teaching our children better. We're going to be better friends. We're going to be better partners. So it really does actually start individually with ourselves.
Some extraordinary thoughts there, Gina. Where can people actually go to find out further information and details about this particular campaign and perhaps get involved themselves?
So we have a self-love hub at thebodyshop.com where you can find different things you can do actionably in our self-love uprising. But we also, I also have a platform where I'm going to be talking a lot about this over the next few months and really leading the conversation with this in my community of women. So if anyone wants to join, men, women, any gender, come along, get involved, be vulnerable, and little and often try and love yourself a little bit better.
There you go. Political activist extraordinaire and author Gina Martin. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and be well.
You too.
Well, as we actually head through the third decade of the 21st century, it's fair to say that most of us actually are conscious of energy and saving energy and coordinating our energy uses and all manner of other bits and pieces. But what about the influences that television could actually have on this? How can that also impact in terms of our energy consumption and so on? Well, we're delighted to actually address this with the director of Smart Energy GB, the wonderful Robert Cheesewright. How are you, Robert?
I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. So, Robert, tell us a bit about this survey that you've actually been involved with, that you've been coordinating together in terms of how energy saving is being represented in the media and so on.
So we've been working with Goldsmiths University to look at, you know, do the things we're doing in our day-to-day lives. So if you go down any street in Britain, you will see we all recycle now. Some of us will have solar panels. Millions of us will have smart meters. We're doing all these great behaviours that we need to be doing. are the television shows that we're watching doing the same? And the reason that's important is because we're influenced by television. I mean, we sometimes don't like to think that we're being quite as influenced by television as we are, of course, but we are. And, you know, 6 in 10 of the people we surveyed said that they do want television to demonstrate green behaviours. So we want our television to be green. So when Goldsmiths looked at this, they found actually they're not green enough. So only 2.4% of TV households recycle. 2.4%, that's compared to 90% of us in our lives. You know, the only solar panel you will find on television that we found in the research was the Love Island Villa. Not a single one in kind of British-based shows. So we need more green behaviours to be shown in the everyday lives of what we're watching. You know, things like soaps lend themselves perfectly to, you know, big dramatic storylines on one hand, but the day-to-day mundane on the other, where you can slowly see green behaviours happening, and that will influence us to do more. And, you know, we've got a climate crisis that we need to tackle. So it's really important that TV plays its part.
Couldn't this be seen as brainwashing by another name, that actually you're just pumping out propaganda instead of just basic entertainment?
TV has always played a social role, whether that's looking at storylines around social issues, around health and wealth, and often protecting us and supporting us through really difficult emotional things in our lives. So I think this has always been the case. What, from my perspective, it's not really propaganda when 90% of us already do it and only 2.4% of TV households do it. I think, and I would also say, you know, this is fairly lighthearted research, pointing a picture at some of the more funny things that are going on with this. So, you know, there was some really good stuff. So Grand Designs obviously is really does show some green stuff, because they build these quite high-end eco homes. But we also saw you know, Mick Carter, Danny Dyer's character on EastEnders, he's a green hero, is Danny Dyer, because he washes the pots by hand in the dark. Which probably isn't the most efficient way of doing it, but is quite good fun. So, you know, this is meant to be fun, this research, as much as it's serious. But we do think there is a serious message too, that TV does have influence, whether we like it or not. And it's important, I think, that, you know, if we're doing it, we're all doing it in our homes. Millions of us have got smart meters and millions of us recycle. There should be some of it on TV too.
What about people who are kind of locked into a kind of nostalgic area? And even if you look at children's shows like Thunderbirds, where characters are regularly lighting up cigarettes and various other bits and pieces, do you think we need to actually sort of revisit those shows and actually put warnings on, just as in the same way as companies like Disney often sort of say, you know, you won't actually sort of see much green recycling in this particular episode?
Do you know what? I don't think so. And obviously there were the worst behaving shows you know, things like Gangs of London and Luther, where there's, you know, gangsters going around in high-end, you know, diesel gas-guzzling cars. And you know what? I think they probably have to keep doing that as part of the show. So no, we don't want storylines radically changing or us kind of having a revisionist worldview where we start pointing fingers at TV shows of the past. But, you know, actually, if in those shows they want to do a car chase in an electric Tesla or something like that, then, you know, that'd be really great fun, to be honest. So I'm all for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, this is meant to be fun, with an underlying serious message that we do all need to play our part when it comes to climate change. Sadly, as much as we need much more action from government and from the companies that we buy stuff from, there are things we can do, whether that's getting a smart meter, because that helps prepare our energy system for more renewables and for more electric cars, or recycling and not leaving the lights on. All of these things do matter. So it's good that television can play a role, because it's a big influencer in our lives.
You mentioned some of those shows that were rated red in terms of not eco-friendly at all. Broadchurch comes in, The Inbetweeners. You mentioned Gangs of London, of course, Luther, The Nest, Collateral. Yeah, I mean, you almost feel guilty watching them now with respect to that, but never mind. We just have to work through that. Now, in terms of the future, I mean, clearly you've said that it's good to actually have evidence. I mean, is this something which you'd like to really kind of percolate through programme makers? I mean, you mentioned obviously Grand Designs, which is, I mean, the genre is very much a reality television in terms of the way that that's put together. Is this something which kind of becomes a kind of matter of course that, and also characters like Danny Dyer and so on are, you know, they can lead ahead. And it's also important for those youngsters who might be watching TV, for their characters, the Peppa Pigs, etc., to also demonstrate some kind of eco awareness.
I think in a gentle way, yes. you know, we do know that the TV shows go to great lengths to make the productions green. So, you know, BAFTA's Albert, which is the organisation that looks after making sure that the production is green, they've done great work. So TV shows now, you know, they don't use plastic bottles, and they often are where they have to drive people for part of the production. They use electric cars and things. So I think we should see that transfer to on screen. I'd love to see Peppa Pig giving Daddy Pig a hard time over not having solar panels or something. I think that would be really good fun. But there are shows that did it really well. So Normal People layers it in really nicely. Fresh Meat did a really good job of showing some quite eco behaviors. So it's actually quite easy, I think, to layer it in a gentle way. So it's in the background, but and not ruining the shows for us. We don't want this to be a killjoy thing. But it helps us too.
Presumably, I say that's one of the reasons Coronation Street's Ray Crosby, also one of the least green characters because of his driving habits with a diesel 4x4. And indeed, he regularly leaves lights on during the day, which is outrageous. I mean, he should be taken out immediately. I'm only suggesting it. I'm only taking it out in the script sense.
It can happen on Coronation Street, can't it? Well, it can have a terrible situation can happen to him.
The situation in the 50th anniversary episode of a tram crash. I mean, I know the director who actually worked with that, and that was very ungreen, but never mind. Although I suppose it was a tram, but still.
But trams are good transport choice. So please no more damage to trams.
Absolutely. So where can people go to, Rob, to find out further details about this survey? Find out whether their favourite programmers or indeed characters are green, amber, or indeed red when it comes to the environment.
Yeah, if you're interested in seeing which shows did well and which ones didn't do well, and learning more about the campaign and smart meters, please do go to smartenergygb.org.
Of course, the next stage, I suppose, could be going back to the days of the old Channel 4 red triangle, where you actually have red triangles to actually warn that there's an eco-unfriendly contract in the programme, which could be another sort of way forward. Just a thought. Rob Cheesewright, huge thanks. Take care, keep on keeping on, and stay friendly and green.
Thank you.